Good afternoon, everyone, and a happy Juneteenth to everyone as well. Our very first Juneteenth holiday. Oh, joy, joy to the world. Is it not a glorious day? We finally have a holiday like no other, Juneteenth. By the way, what exactly is Juneteenth? Does anybody know? Does anybody care? I'll be real honest, and I know I'm going to get in trouble for this, but Juneteenth kind of reminds me of Festivus from Seinfeld. Do you remember George and his family every Christmas celebrated Festivus for the rest of us? Yeah, it's, like I said, it's not that I'm opposed to acknowledging Juneteenth, but it was a local holiday. It was initially a local Galveston, Texas deal. Then it became a state holiday in Texas, and now it's a national holiday. So now all of a sudden, everyone is supposed to celebrate this. But anyway, I'm going to get more into Juneteenth and all of that after a while. But for now, I'm going to move on to some other news and things you may or may not have heard of in this past week. First of all, straight from the Babylon Bee this week, we find that California public schools ban the teaching of critical thinking. Sacramento, California. As more and more states announce bans on critical race theory, California is pushing in the other direction. It has just passed a ban on teaching any kind of critical thinking in public schools. This is dangerous. Critical thinking theory must be stopped, said Governor Newsom sternly as he signed the ban into law. It's infecting our kids' minds, making them start to question things like unilateral lockdown on businesses, forcing people to wear masks forever, and shutting down other businesses while I, myself, allow my winery to stay open. Today represents a great day for the students of California public schools. No more critical thinking. Should the ban prove successful, Newsom says, the next step will be to ban thinking altogether. Luckily for Newsom and California school teachers, studies have shown that critical thinking hasn't really been taught in public schools in the past 50 years in the first place. So, oh, you got to love the Babylon Bee. I honestly don't know how they get away with a lot of the things that they do, but somehow they do get away with it. And yeah, they don't stop. They do not stop. Here's another thing. Here's something you may not have picked up this week in the midst of everything else that was going on, particularly with our president visiting Europe and having his much-awaited sit-down and summit with Vladimir Putin. And I'm going to get to a little more to that as well. I don't know how many of you know who Lin-Manuel Miranda is. He's the lead actor and writer of the hugely successful play, Hamilton. Hamilton was the rage for about 3 years. I mean, you couldn't get tickets. If you did, they were outrageous. Scalpers were scalping them like at Super Bowl prices just to go see this play. And then they made a big deal out of essentially taunting and driving Vice President Pence from a showing, which I thought was disgraceful. What they did to the vice president. Lin-Manuel Miranda, the main guy behind it, actually, he's now in hot water. Bloom has come off the road. It's just not, he's not the man anymore. What happened, he wrote a new play. And in that new play, he basically used Latino actors and actresses. If I'm not mistaken, Lin-Manuel is Puerto Rican. I'm not sure. He's from somewhere in the Caribbean versus Mexico or South America. I think he's more from the Caribbean, probably Puerto Rico or Cuba or somewhere. Apparently, that's not good enough anymore. And so he had to apologize. First, he had to apologize because he wrote a new play. It's a new play. And in this new play, he has been accused of not using any black actors. Instead of using black actors, he's using all Hispanic actors. He's in trouble because he doesn't have enough black actors in it, or Afro-Latino, they call them now. They're no longer African-American. They're now Afro-Latino or Afro-Hispanic actors. Bill Maher. Bill Maher has jumped into this thing, and Bill Maher has gotten a little ticked off, and he tells Lin-Manuel, he says, stop apologizing. You're the guy who made the founding fathers black and Hispanic. I don't think you have to apologize for F's sake. This is why people hate Democrats. It's cringy. Now, when Bill Maher is saying that people hate Democrats, that's saying something. Maher added that he doesn't believe Miranda actually wanted to apologize, but said it's time for people to start standing up to the woke social media bullies. Wow. This is Bill Maher saying it's time to stand up to social media bullies. It's getting bad. It's getting bad out there. And comedians are the ones who are mainly waking up. And like the court jesters of old, they're finally saying, enough of this. He says, do I really think he needs to apologize? I don't. He just wants to avoid the news cycle. And he even said he doesn't really think that Manuel really believes in the apologies either. My goodness, I'm having a hard time today. He doesn't believe it either. He just wants to avoid being the guy in the news cycle. And Mark says, I don't blame him. I understand this, but at some point, people are going to have to stand up to these bullies because that's what it is. It's bullying. It's I could make you crawl like a dog, and I enjoy it. I mean, he's a Latino making a Latino movie with a Latino cast. That's not good enough. Nothing is ever good enough for these people. They're like children. We don't raise children right, and it's reflected in the media. No one ever tells their children to sit down and shut the F up. Sit down, listen to your elders, stop bitching. So Bill Maher is now calling out the woke mob. Wow, that's a step in the right direction. You know, that doesn't make him a Republican or conservative or anything like that. But watch, soon they'll be finding reasons to give Bill Maher a hard time. And the name of the movie, it's called The Heights. It's based on the book that Miranda created Broadway play by. And the story follows characters based in Manhattan's famous Washington Heights neighborhood, which has a significant Hispanic and Dominican population. So it's a part of New York City that has that large population. Now, he's also getting flack from other areas in the black community. Toni Morrison, for those of you that don't know, Toni Morrison was a black writer, author, a friend of Hillary Clinton and lauded and everything. And she really did not like Lin-Manuel Miranda. She just did not like Mr. Miranda. And she hated Hamilton. She hated Hamilton so much that she helped finance a play called The Haunting of Lin-Manuel Miranda. So she's wishing somebody would haunt him. By the way, she's passed away. The late author, whose work explored black identity in America, reportedly made the second largest donation to fund a play that was written by Ishmael Reed, who is best known for his 1972 novel, Mumbo Jumbo. Now, I've spoken with, or I used to debate Mr. Reed on, believe it or not, AOL. That tells you how long ago that was. That was back in the early 2000s. Mr. Reed and I were part of this chat group of black people, mostly, well, all black leftists and radicals. I was the only conservative in there. I was like chum for these people. And they used to love to attack me, and I used to get back at them. And actually, it really helped me. It's what actually helped me develop my thoughts, because I saw how ignorant and dumb some of these people were. And they had a lady in there that called herself the goddess Isis. She believed she was some reincarnation of the goddess Isis and actually took herself seriously. But it was pretty crazy. Now, Mr. Reed, don't get me wrong. Mr. Reed is a very intelligent person. Okay, Mr. Reed is very, very smart, very intelligent. But he, like so many other black Americans, wear their color and their race like cloak. They can't get past it. They just can't get past it. Hamilton, the hip-hop-inspired Broadway sensation, brought about Alexander Hamilton's rise. It humanized the founding fathers in a show that's considered emblematic of the Obama years. It was viewed through a different lens during the Trump years. Ishmael Reed has been one of Hamilton's most ardent critics. In 2019, he told Current Affairs, they cast black people in order to defend projects that black people might find objectionable. it sort of distracts from the racism of the white historical character. So he penned the play, a rewriting of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, that portrays a fictionalized version of the Hamilton creator who is visited by historical figures portrayed in the musical. By the end of the play, the fictional Miranda is supposed to see the error of his ways in creating Hamilton. So he should never have created the most successful play probably in the last 40 years. He says, I draw attention to what was left out of Hamilton. This is Ishmael Reed. I draw attention to what was left out of Hamilton by giving speaking parts to those who were left out of the narrative. The Haunting of Lin-Manuel Miranda ran in theaters in New York in 2019 with Reed telling AAWW magazine, at the time, Toni Morrison was the second largest patron of my new play, The Haunting of Lin-Manuel Miranda. Morrison, the author of the classics, The Bluest Eyes, Beloved, she passed away in August of 2019. Miranda responded to the critics of Hamilton in last July when he tweeted, all the criticisms are valid, a sheer tonnage of complexities and failings of these people I couldn't get or wrestled with but cut. I took 6 years and fit as much as I could in a 2.5-hour musical. I did my best, and it's all fair game. Miranda was forced to apologize this week after he reached the movie version of his other musical, The Heights, when it was marred by a colorism casting controversy. Colorism now, it's a new term. Colorism is when the people aren't black enough. It's not good enough to be brown. You know, they always talk about, we're here for the rights of black and brown people. Unless there are no black people, then we forget about the brown people. My little young protege here, Julian, who is 3/4 Hispanic, I guess that would make you Hispanic. He, you know, let me just put it this way, you're not black enough. Julie, I'm sorry to break it to you, buddy, but yeah, I know. It's gotten crazy. Colorism is what they're calling because Heights was not cast black enough. The film has drawn severe online condemnation for lacking Afro-Latinx. I guess that's a new term now. Man, they keep coming up with new words. Who can keep up with all this stuff? You need a whole new glossary just to figure out what all these Afro-Latinx. Is that Latins with a Kleenex or something? I don't know. You know. Anyway, it just says they lack the representation in the cast. I'm seeing the distinction around Afro-Latino representation in our film this week, and it's clear that many in our dark-skinned Afro-Latino community don't feel sufficiently represented, particularly among the leading roles, Miranda tweeted in a statement. I can hear the hurt and the frustration over colorism of feeling still unseen in the feedback. In trying to paint a mosaic of this community, we fell short, he added. I'm truly sorry. I'm learning from the feedback. I thank you for raising it, and I am listening. Oh, my goodness. This poor guy. So they made him bow at the trough of racism. And it's Bill Maher is correct. And the only ones who really seem to be standing up against this today are comedians. Comedians understand and see the danger in what's going on here, that everything is suspect. I keep bringing this back, and I keep hearing it from other people. This is so like the French Revolution. Now, fortunately, we're not at the guillotine part yet, but it may come. You know, the things they're trying to do to Trump, even after all of the failed attempts to find anything, they're still, you know, you got the attorney for the Southern District of New York or whatever that is. I don't know. It reminds me of this TV show on HBO, HBO or Showtime. I can't remember. Billions with Bobby Axelrod, you know, and you got this guy, Chuck, who's the prosecutor. He's the attorney for the Southern District of New York, and they're trying to get this guy for stock shenanigans and all. It's like these people are really, they ought to be ashamed of themselves. Let's just put it that way. I really have a very, very difficult time with these people. And this woke mob, somebody has to just stand up and say, as Bill Maher said, sit down and shut up. Just sit down and shut up. And until people are willing to do that, they're just going to push. It truly is like children, like little children who are going to push. And the other side reminds me of the parents of the car driving. I remember a Saturday Night Live skit where parents are driving. I think it was Jane Curtin and Chevy Chase. Oh, what's his name? I can't think of his name right now. He used to be one of the main guys on there. They were driving, and the kids in the back were acting up, and Jane would always turn around. Kids, you stop that. Stop that right now. Just calm down, or we're going to pull over. Well, they don't pull over, and next thing you know, the kids are throwing things. Pull over, we're going to spank you. And then the kids would, the next thing you know, you see knives flailing and blood flying all over the back seat. You still got the parents threatening and warning these kids without taking any action, without doing anything. So that's kind of what this reminds me of. When you just, you, there are no consequences, then they'll keep on. It reminds me, I was a member of Youth with a Mission. I worked as a missionary for Youth with a Mission for 12 years with my wife, and then our kids were with us. Our four children, in fact, two were born in the mission field. So the we're out there, and there was a code that YWAM went by. It was kind of a book, a little booklet written by one of the early YWAM people, and it was called The Moral Code of God, Moral Authority, actually The Moral Authority of God. And in this, he made a very interesting statement. I wish I could remember his name right now. I don't remember the name of the writer. In any way, He made an interesting statement which says, what is it? Laws without consequences are just good advice. That's what laws without consequences are. So when you tell people you shouldn't do this, but there's no consequence to doing it, then what happens? It's just good advice and you can take it or reject it. That's what we see happening in cities like New York. It's happening in San Francisco. It's happening now in L.A. with the DA there. Cities and states all around the country, Chicago, where prosecutors are now not able to mete out punishment any longer, and a lot of judges aren't meting out punishment for the wrongful acts. And if you don't have punishment with the wrongful acts to back up your law, all you have, again, is good advice. And people can either take it or leave it, and it appears that they are leaving it. So that's what's going on there. I don't know why America has gone into this situation where all we're able to do is give good advice, because it's honestly, I believe, destroying our nation. As I said last week, we're in a precarious situation because we have communists, we have Islamists, and we have New Agers that are making our rule. They're destroying our educational system. They're destroying our legal system. They're destroying so many of the systems that have made America what it is. And we really need to see that stop. Okay? We'll take our break right now. And when we get back, we will discuss Joe Biden, his trip, his issue with the Catholic bishops, and then we'll get into Juneteenth. This is Eddie Huff, and you're listening to Fresh Black Coffee. We are black. Black at you. Hey, getting to our illustrious president, Joseph Biden, Joe Biden. He had quite a week. We'll start. Okay, I'll start with him in Switzerland. And here in Switzerland, on the beautiful Lake Geneva, Genf, as they call it, in Holland and Belgium and some of those. And I think the Germans call it that too, Genf. It's a beautiful place, I do have to say. And there I go again with the man. In any event, I've got to work on that, Julian. I've got to work on it. You got to start slapping me every time I say that. So Joe's over there, and the big meeting with Putin took place. First, of course, the European press, and well, not the press so much, the other European leaders were just acting like Joe was the man. When they were on their own, but when they were with him, it's like he was shut out. I don't know if any of you saw the video where they were walking, and all of them were up. Trudeau and several of the in the English prime minister were Boris Johnson, who has worse hair than Trump. I mean, much worse. There's no way that could be an accident. He must do that on purpose. There he was. They were walking with the Queen, and all of the leaders were right there behind. Joe was just kind of in the back. I mean, he was like facing the wrong direction as they were taking off. He was just like he was lost. And finally, someone waited and let him walk beside them all the way in the back. And that truly is a picture of where America stands in the world today. It's just like we're the redhead stepchild, like some orphan we picked up and kind of left on the side. So that's where Joe was. But then we had the much awaited meeting with Vladimir Putin. And I spoke about that last week, how they were not going to have a joint press conference. They were going to do a separate press conference. And Joe, of course, he did. And the media, well, man, one CNN reporter actually had the audacity to ask Joe some really good and serious questions. And he got mad. It's funny, I guess when they get off the subject of what ice cream flavor he likes, he doesn't like that. It makes him grumpy. So, you know, other than telling you that his favorite ice cream is chocolate, he gets really, really ticked off. And it was pretty bad in this poor young lady, you know. But then what happens? Then they try to cover. In fact, when the lady started asking the question, this guy stood up to her left, looking at her like, how dare you ask that question? I thought he was getting ready to snatch the mic from the girl. But fortunately, he didn't. And Joe came back. He starts wagging his finger, pointing his finger, yelling at the girl and telling her she shouldn't be in the business and all this stuff, which is the true Joe Biden. First of all, the guy's an idiot. I'm going to say it. The village idiot, I guess you could say. And the only difference is he's the village idiot with a bad attitude. And if Jill is not around to hold his hand and keep him under control, Joe is not fit for prime time. And so he was here at this thing, and he and Putin met in private. Leave it to Vladimir. Vladimir, he has to be one of the shrewdest and sharpest people I know. What does he do? He decides he's going to have his own press conference with the media. Oh, my goodness. He let them have it. He told them that the U.S. essentially, everything that we're accusing them of, we do ourselves. He talked about the people from January 6th. This was the really beautiful part that what he did. It was interesting how the people who were arrested on January 6th at the Capitol for what the Democrats want to paint as the worst insurrection in the history of the United States, worse than the Civil War, worse than 9/11, and all of this kind of stuff, which is just stupid on face, okay? Anybody that buys that, really, I feel sorry for you. I really do. I feel really, really sorry for you. But so Putin says, how is it that we have 40-some people or 100 people? I don't even know how many it is. I'm not keeping up with the numbers. But he said, we have all these people in jail from January 6th without due process. I mean, we don't know what the charges are. We don't know what's going on with them. What did they do? And so forth. So he brought that up. He didn't go to the race thing about America being a racist nation or anything like that. He went straight to the fact that we are denying our citizens their rights. Wow. That's pretty bold. But sadly, it's true. It's true that we are not affording rights under the Constitution to these people. How many of you watched Tucker this week? In the latter part of the week, Tucker went somewhere where I don't think anybody expected him to go. It's pretty bold. He basically accused the FBI of inciting violence in the Capitol. He said there are like 43 people, I believe, 43 what they call unindicted co-conspirators in the riot. And what an unindicted co-conspirator is a person that's involved but not a part of the crime. In other words, they're part of fleshing out the bad people, I guess. And he pointed out that the FBI had these plants among the Capitol rioters. And these are people that are set in place to specifically incite things that they can later arrest them for. Wow. And he's been attacked for that. Of course, the typical people at MSNBC and CNN have been all over Tucker's case for this, saying how preposterous and how he's making this stuff up. No, people, he's not making this up. It was very interesting stuff. If you don't or didn't get a chance to see it, go to Foxnews.com, and I'm sure you can look up those segments because they keep them there. But, man, very, very important stuff. And Tucker is all over it. He's not letting down. They're trying everything to attack the guy, but Tucker will not relent. Tucker, I have to say, probably has the best show on television these days as far as pointing out what's really going on in this nation. After that, I would have to say it's Newsmax. Newsmax is pretty good. I like to watch Newsmax as well. So it's between Tucker. Tucker's about the only thing I watch on Fox, and then I go to Newsmax. And in the mornings, I start my day with Fox Business. So those are the three things I encourage everybody to look at from my personal standpoint. I mean, you don't have to like them or not. You know, you're free. So anyway, that's what I wanted to say there. But yeah, it is really interesting that Vladimir Putin brought up the whole thing about January 6th and all of the people that were arrested and now are still in jail. No bail, no hearings, no nothing. And I don't, they're just sitting there. They're like political prisoners in a gulag in Russia. The only thing, we don't have a gulag, but these people are not being given the benefit of their rights. Okay. All right. One other thing real quick before I get to the Juneteenth. This is a kind of, it's a little longer than I'll try to cut it down. But the Catholic bishops this week, they voted to discuss the whole or debate the issue of giving communion to pro-abortion politicians after a debate over Joe Biden in particular. Because here we have the president of the United States, very upfront, one of the most important politicians in the world, and some bishops have said they're not going to give communion to these people. That you take Biden, you take Nancy Pelosi, you take others that promote abortion, which is the killing of the unborn. They promote that and yet want to still proclaim their Catholic faith. So they met for a 3-day virtual conference and then they took the vote. And in the vote, there were like 243 of these bishops, and 165 of them, just say 30, I'm sorry, 253. In this vote, it was 165 to 88 to draft a formal statement on the meaning of the Eucharist and life of the church. And as a part of that, it deals with giving communion to people that are obviously sinning in going against teachings of the church. Now, one of the problems they're having, some of the bishops want to follow the Vatican's lead, and the Vatican warned U.S. bishops who were advocating against Biden being given communion, saying they were in danger of making the sacrament into a political weapon. Well, it's already a political weapon, and who cares if it's a political weapon? Either the sacrament is a sacrament or it's not a sacrament. That's the important thing. Is it a sacrament or is it not a sacrament? If it's sin, a mortal sin at that, according to the Catholic Church, is it something to keep someone from being able to have communion? Now, or is it going to be something that if I go every Saturday night, oh, forgive me, Father, for I've sinned, my last confession was a week ago, and these are my sins, I promoted abortion, do so many Hail Marys, so many Our Fathers, blah, 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 bless you, my son. If it's going to be that, then it really, again, means nothing. Because again, we're back to the moral government of God. Laws without consequences, just good advice. So this is what's going on. This is what happened in the Catholic Church, or is going on right now. One of the bishops, the Archbishop Jose Gomez of Los Angeles, he was one of the most vehement critics of Biden. Can you believe it? From L.A., from Los Angeles. He says, I must point out that our new president has pledged to pursue certain policies that would advance moral evils and threaten human life and dignity, most seriously in the areas of abortion, contraception, marriage, and gender, Gomez said in a statement from January. This is what he said. of deep concern is the liberty of the church and the freedom of believers to live according to your conscience," he added. So, by the way, in keeping with that, on Thursday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi refused to answer a question on whether a 15-week-old unborn baby is a human during a press conference on Capitol Hill. She is also, like Biden, an abortion-supporting Catholic, and she took a deep breath and paused. And she says, "Let me just say that I'm a big supporter of Roe v. Wade," dodging the question. "I'm a mother of 5 children in 6 years. I think I have some standing on this issue as to respecting the woman's right to choose." Well, I think that's an answer right there. I think she just basically told us that she supports abortion, and therefore she would fall under that rule as well, not receiving communion. And basically, they need to be forced to make a decision. Now, Protestants don't have that rule. Protestants don't give communion like that. We tell people to search their own souls, to, you know, every time before you go to communion, you're supposed to ask yourself if you have sin that's unconfessed, that's undealt with, and so forth. Are you worthy of receiving communion? So it's a little different, and there's even less consequence. But if you are the Catholic Church or another denomination that is supposedly under specific guidelines and rules, then you either have to follow and obey those rules or get rid of the rule. There's no other choice, okay? Personally, I like the Protestant way, but if you think about it, that moral government of God, getting back to that again, it is stricter than any rules that the Catholic Church might have. In other words, if you think to lust, if you think to do this, if you think to kill somebody, you've basically done it. Whereas in the Catholic confessional, it's only, did you actually do it? And that's the difference. It's kind of a dilemma for the Catholics. They really need to deal with this one way or another. Biden's name was mentioned several times, including by the Bishop Liam Carey from the Diocese of Baker in Oregon. He described what he sees as an unprecedented situation in this country. "We've never had a situation like this where the executive is a Catholic president opposed to the teachings of the church." I mean, he nails it. Archbishop Joseph Neumann of Kansas City, who leads the Bishop's Committee on Pro-Life Activities, has been among the most vocal critics of Biden supporting abortion rights. He said he's disturbed by Catholic officials who flaunt their Catholicity. Well, that's the first time I would say their Catholicism, but the Catholicity, oh, it's a new one, while publicly taking positions on abortion that conflict with the teachings of the church. And we have a lot. I don't want to pick on Catholics. I do have to say, I am a former Catholic, and as friends of mine, we used to call ourselves Catholics Plus. I don't believe I quit being a Catholic. I quit following some of the tenets, some of the dogma, some of the ritual of the church, but I believe I've added so much more to it. But I'm not one of those. I had friends, and I see people a lot of times who come out of the Catholic Church and non-Catholics who like to attack the Catholic Church. They want to accuse the Catholic Church of being the church of the Antichrist, and that's where the beast is going to come from, and the Pope is the beast and all of that kind of stuff. No, I'm not buying all of that. Truly, if you really look at church history, the Catholic Church has been the one vehicle that has pretty much stayed the line. They've stayed the course. They haven't veered to the right and the left. If you look at the Protestant Church as it began, you have so many offshoots, so many splinters, so many divisions. And from there, you've got people cast out. Now we have the most liberal theology in the world, and they still call themselves churches. I don't know. You know, I just get upset with all of them. So while I'm not going back to the Catholic Church, I at the same time find as much fault in the non-Catholic Church as I do with the Catholic Church. So I will never throw stones. I will never throw stones. We've got a situation where the Catholics do have a dilemma on their hands. They need to deal with this. It will be resolved eventually, and we'll see. And I pray that they come up with the right decision, which I believe is they do have a right to deny communion to Joe Biden and others. Our final story that we're going to deal with tonight or this afternoon, whatever time it is where you are on this Juneteenth or during the week after. I want to get to the whole Juneteenth thing, okay? Not as much as I thought. I mean, they came through with this quickly. Here's my view on Juneteenth, okay? First of all, it's another black holiday. How many does that make now? You got the month. Well, you start with Martin Luther King's birthday in January, right? So you've got Martin Luther King's birthday in January. Then you've got February, which has the entire month devoted to Black History Month. Now you've got Juneteenth. Are we going to eventually celebrate Kwanzaa as well? Is that going to be the new Christmas? Are we going to have time off for Kwanzaa? Make it a federal holiday and Million Man March Day because all of it. I have to tell you this. I remember I used to love Mad TV. It used to be on Fox years ago. And Mad TV, I thought, was actually much funnier than Saturday Night Live. They dealt with a lot more real issues. They were pretty balanced. There was no political bent in it. But they had this one skit where, in fact, they were probably like The Onion to some extent. They were truly satirical. Satirical is actually the word, but I'm going back to that Catholicity. Anyway, it was a satirical show. And the boss of a UPS office had these two black employees, and he called them in one day, and he says, hey, we got a problem here, guys. You guys, out of 365 days, you've missed about 200 of the days. I'm sorry, we can't do that. And so these guys started explaining why they took all the time off. And their reasoning was all of the black holidays. And they started with Martin Luther King's birthday. And then they did use Juneteenth. They talked about Juneteenth. They talked about the Tulsa riot. They talked about all of these things that they had to. And then, of course, they threw in the, and he said, well, wait a minute, you took off 31 days for the Million Man March? He said, yeah, you remember, get on the bus. We had to get on the bus. We took a bus trip up there. Then we stayed there for a Million Man March. That took about a week. And then we took the bus back. And then we had to recover after that. And so they basically had a whole month for the Million Man March. And then they had all of these Kwanzaa. And they had all of these. I mean, it was well done, very well done, because they had a response for everything. And this is kind of what it reminds me of, this whole situation with Juneteenth. Here's, for those of you that aren't familiar with Juneteenth, it's the 19th of June. And what it is, Galveston, Texas was the last place, supposedly, there were probably other smaller communities, I would imagine, but for some reason, the last major place to get word that slaves had been liberated, the Civil War was over, and the slaves had been liberated. And therefore, the Galvestonians, particularly the black Galvestonians, you know, that's a new word too, Galveston, the residents of Galveston began to celebrate, and they made this a holiday in Galveston. Then Texas, black folks in Texas wanted to make it a state holiday, so it became a state holiday, and they were all excited for Juneteenth as a state holiday, and now it has finally become a national holiday. And I just saw the photos and the news clips of Biden surrounded by all of these black folks, and of course Nancy Pelosi's got her face in the middle of it all with him signing this new law declaring June 19th a federal holiday. So how many does that make? How many black holidays does that make? It almost, you know, I'll be honest with you, it almost supports the idea that black people are lazy. I mean, if you think about all the holidays, that every time you turn around, they want a holiday to get off for. Yeah, I'm sure they say they wanted to celebrate Martin Luther King's birthday. You got African History Month, or Black History Month, whatever you want to call it. They want to take off for Kwanzaa. Now they've got Juneteenth. You've got Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day. Here's what disturbs me, though. Congress voted 415-14, and the Senate unanimously voted to add another day off on the federal schedule. This now is actually, I believe, kind of taking the place of July 4th. It's, I believe, that's what it's designed. Let's look back at February. Because they made Martin Luther King's birthday a holiday, they now have turned the two presidents, Washington and Lincoln, they've turned them into one holiday, President's Day. used to have a day off for Lincoln's birthday and then Washington, and they now split the difference, and they call it President's Day. The Monday in between those two is now President's Day. Some people still call it Washington's birthday. It's actually called President's Day, so you've made one holiday out of those two, and they've chosen to leave Washington's name in there, I believe subtly, to erase the memory of Abraham Lincoln. Why would they do that? They would do that because they know that it was Democrats started the Civil War. It was Democrats who owned the slaves. It's Democrats fought for slavery, not and Republicans fought to free the slaves. Now, I'd love for somebody to try to convince me or try to prove where I'm wrong, but it is. The Ku Klux Klan, for example, was a terror organization formed by the Democrat Party to attack Republicans, not black people, Republicans. It was a political arm of the Democrat Party that would persuade people to vote Democrat. That was the reason for the Ku Klux Klan. It wasn't a racial thing. It was a political thing. Now, they did it partially to keep in force their racial policies of segregation and deny rights to the black people and all of this. This was after the Civil War, by the way, when it was formed. And the Democrats also initiated Jim Crow laws, all of that. It's all Democrats, 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 Democrats. They did lynching. By the way, there were 200 anti-lynching proposals made Republicans between 1865 and 1965. Every one of them was banned by or through filibuster, through downvotes and everything by Democrats. Several years ago, Mary Landrieu from Louisiana, she was a senator from Louisiana, and she proposed an apology for not passing anti-lynching laws. And there were 24 Republicans, I believe, who refused to sign it. And they, of course, tried to say it's because they were racist. And one of the Republican senators said, no, it's not because we're racist, but we don't have anything to apologize for. We brought this up 200 times, and 200 times you Democrats opposed us and kept us from passing the anti-lynching laws. Bam, right in your face, lady. But, of course, the complicit media never really publicized that. The U.S. Congress voted 415 to 14, the Senate unanimously, to add this day now on our calendar. Now, this year, it's a Saturday, so forget it. But starting next year, because it's on Sunday, I believe it will probably be observed on the Monday after. We'll see how that works next year, but I believe it's going to be observed next year on Monday. It just continues to go. Now, here's my problem with it. I don't think we need this holiday. Here's why. And I think it's a bogus holiday. It's something to take away from the Republican president, Abraham Lincoln, the Republican Party, who was founded for one reason, to end slavery. That's the only reason there is a Republican Party today, because they formed with disgruntled Democrats, the Know-Nothing Party, to end slavery. It was the Abolitionist Party. Okay, go back and look at the original platform. All the planks, all but two, I believe, were dealing with the abolition of slavery. That's why the party was formed. That's why Abraham Lincoln was made president, and they're trying to erase the memory. Lincoln, they're trying to erase the memory of the Republican Party and its part in abolition. Now, Abraham Lincoln, for those of you that don't know, actually signed the Emancipation Proclamation on September 22nd of 1862, and it was made official January 1st of 1863. We still had 2 years of Revolutionary War. On December 6th, 1865, the 13th Amendment was ratified to make it law in the entire United States of America. And there's so much more history. When my book comes out here shortly, and I will let you know when that happens, when that comes out, it has a whole part in there about all of this and the dates and all of the things that our founding fathers put in the Constitution as time bombs to end slavery right from the beginning. Our nation was not founded on slavery. Our nation was founded to end slavery, first to the King of England for everyone, and then eventually slaves of Americans in America. But here's a funny one. Here's what I use. Oh, yeah, so why not? I mean, you could pick either September 22nd as a holiday, because that's when Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. You probably don't want to mess with January 1st because that of 1863, because we already have a holiday called New Year's Day. Or you could use December 6th in 1865 when the 13th Amendment was ratified. But those are three different dates that we could use. Just because the people of Galveston didn't know that they were free doesn't mean they weren't free. Here's what it reminds me of. I don't know if any of you know the history about Japan and the war afterwards. The end of World War II actually occurred in 1945, right? But believe it or not, the last Japanese soldier to surrender was in 1974. 1974, people. So we're talking 30 or 29 years later before this gentleman realized the war was really over. But it was, the Japanese had soldiers on all of these different Pacific islands, and there were several soldiers on all these islands that after the war were just left on the islands, and they didn't find them. They were off in the bush. And the last one, I mean, periodically they would find one, and they would still be fighting. I mean, they thought the war was still going on. They were holding out, refusing to surrender. And finally, the word got to them that war is over. And the final soldier of the Japanese Imperial Army surrendered. He gave up his sword. In fact, there's photos online you can see of him surrendering his sword in surrender, acknowledging that the war is over. The other thing that bothers me about this holiday, though, is that they're calling the National Day of Independence. Well, see, that kind of gives me the impression that they are eventually going to call this Independence Day. Because why else would you call it the National Day of Independence? It's not the National Day of Independence. It's the Galveston Day of Independence, basically. That's what they could call it, the Galveston Day of Independence, not the National Day of Independence. So that's it. That's going to do it. Wow, man, almost an hour has flown by. I'm going to go ahead and stop right now. I thank Julian for your great work. Not going to sleep on me over there behind the board. No, I hope you learned something, Julian, and I particularly hope you people at home learned something. This is Eddie Huff. Look it up on freshblackcoffee.podbean.com. freshblackcoffee.podbean.com. You can contact me at freshblackcoffee@gmail.com. God bless. Talk to you next week.